You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the free version of the Michael Savage podcast, and I'm going to keep it free for all of you. But there are many of you who would love to be able to listen to my show without any ads. I love ads, but many of you want to listen to the podcast free of ads. So we created something for you, a solution. We call it the Savage Premium. For less than the price of one flat, tasteless beer at your local bar, you can receive access to all of my podcasts going back years ad-free for just $3.99. That's it, $3.99 a month. You'll get not only my ad-free podcast, but you will also occasionally receive access to material that is exclusive for members only, and I'm going to give you the list in a minute of what you've missed. You're going to get an occasional monologue from me, maybe a reading from one of my novels, sneak peeks of interviews before anyone else hears them, archive pieces dating back to 1994. Many things that come up, you're going to get exclusive access to Michael Savage material. Details can be seen on my website, michaelsavage.com, and if you want to join, all you got to do is go to glow.fm and search Savage Premium. That's glow.fm and search Savage Premium. Now, you will always have access to my free weekly podcast. I want to be clear about that. That's my promise to you. But if you want less ads and more Savage, join the Savage Premium Club today and never miss a spoken word of mine. It's glow.fm/savagepremium. You can find it on michaelsavage.com. And here's some of the stuff that you have missed so far. Michael Savage reading from his best-selling novel, Countdown to Mecca. My words, my voice. Savage reads from one of his lost journals, Fiji, 1968. Savage's first drive-time show, Hour One. My interview with the Jewish gangster, very popular. I read from my first written published article, Who Is at the Helm, from 1965. It's heard nowhere but on my premium site. I read passages from my novel, Abuse of Power. We replayed Fat Al's Tuna. My Savage show from 324.94, the earliest show in the archive, 324.94. My interview with Donald Trump from 110.2011. 110.2011, while Mark Levin was mocking him and Sean Hannity was mocking him and the others were mocking him, I was interviewing Trump. Much more. And remember, subscribers also get ad-free podcasts every week. The cost is less than a beer at a bar, and you get a better buzz with the Savage Premium. So go to glow.fm/savagepremium for full access to ad-free podcasts and exclusive sound you'll not hear anywhere else. Thank you very much. Welcome to the Michael Savage Podcast. You know, there's been titles such as Meetings of Remarkable Minds and things like that. Well, I have a remarkable podcast for you today. I had a conversation with the great novelist Jeff Rovin, and you loved him. We had him on before. So I'm calling this Two Fine Minds Discuss World Politics and the Future. Will America suffer the same fate as Rome? Now, many of you have asked me to have Jeff back on this podcast. Well, we spoke again last week, and this time we talked about, has America lost its national identity? We touched on Russia, Ukraine, Zelensky, how we need a strong leader, and how the left attacked Trump, how the perverted New World Order is forcing their views onto the entire population of the world, with very rare exception. Of course, we touched on O'Biden, because Biden is a continuation of Obama. We talked about movies, old and new, because Jeff knows a lot about movies. He's a screenwriter. If you're interested in screenwriting, you're going to love this podcast. Is Putin a sociopath? We touched on violence in the media And we talked about what happens when the wicked assert their power. God will always intervene now. So look, there's so much more in this podcast. That's why I came up with the title, The Meetings of Remarkable Minds, or Two Fine Minds Discussing World Politics. But it's so much more than that. I know you're going to love it. It's just for you. So please settle back, whether you're in a car or a home. Enjoy this podcast. And thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoy it.
Africa. 100 years ago, a trackless land. Majestic. Savage. Bloodstained. Life here was at its most primitive. Africa's wealth attracted the greedy. In such a land, in such a time, vengeful African warriors would attack a safari with unbelievable cruelty. Man became the naked prey.
Hello, Professor Ovid.
Dr. Savage.
My God. What a world. We can begin with this crazy thing I just saw on Twitter.
Okay.
It's of the NATO meeting. And they're sitting there and a girl is on the stage, literally having like a nervous breakdown, twisting. And it's like performance art. She's just throwing herself on the floor. This is NATO, Jeff. Then there's another one of a young man who gets up and starts screaming and they're clapping, just yelling. Jeff, are we the last two sane men on earth?
I don't even know about you, Michael, but yeah.
Oh, Jeff, what a world. So the last time we talked, I'm speaking with the great Jeff Rovin, who is a famous novelist and screenwriter and martial artist, husband, and all-around great guy. And the last time we talked was in February 4th, 2022. The title was, I came up with a flashy title, Putin as Seen by a Famous Novelist. How does this war end? Masada, Sitting Bull, or Hirohito? Now, we referenced your book, which foretold of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, in your book, Dark Zone. And we told the audience that the U.S. intelligence community even enlisted Jeff Rovin, best known for his work with the best-selling Tom Clancy series, to envision possible scenarios in global warfare. Now, we're not going to spend the whole day talking about that, but things have changed for the worse since then in many ways. Jeff, where do you see this Ukraine thing going, this war? Because I saw Zelensky now put out a blacklist, and I said, I'm not really seeing this. I can't believe he's that egomaniacal and crazy. It's because he's gotten away with everything he's wanted. Now, I understand the minute I say that, I'm accused of being in favor of Russia bombing Ukraine into the Stone Age, which I'm not. But on the other hand, how does Zelensky get away with this kind of madness?
Good Lord, that's several podcasts worth of material right there. You know, the short answer is there's no real oversight, either politically or, more importantly, morally. We have, and I think this is where we left off in the last podcast, we have surrendered any kind of objective morality in the world. And we've surrendered the objective morality that once governed the world. That served us for most of civilization. You and I have talked about religion and faith and the Ten Commandments and all of that.
All right. So the gays and lesbians came along. Let's not mince words. And they said the Bible is bullshit. We'll do what we want. And now whatever we want to do is better than what you're doing. And families, viviparous reproduction, as Huxley wrote, in Brave New World, is now considered an embarrassment. And we're moving towards creating babies in laboratories, if we make them at all.
Yeah, well, you know, there's nobody that says we have to actually listen to these lunatics. And, you know, I'm not saying that. There was a time, and you well remember this, when we called it women's liberation or gay liberation, civil rights were urgently needed in the late 60s, early 70s. But what happened was that they lost their own focus and became incredibly narcissistic, to the expense of everyone else. And the thing that distinguished America, every nation on earth, you look at China, you look at Russia, is a mishmash of different ethnicities and races and religions and whatnot. And more often than not, they're held together with force of arms. Look at Iraq, for example, under Hussein. We held together under a constitution, and we had a common goal, and that goal was to enhance America, to bring the American dream to each new generation. And then there were people who decided, well, this didn't really apply to us, so we're going to upend the whole shebang and destroy it for everyone, and we'll start all over again. And whether it was Obama populating the government with deep state socialists, or the media becoming so left-leaning that it was it became dangerous. I don't know. Probably a combination of all of that. But we've lost our national identity, and some of us are trying very hard to hold on to it and bring it back to what it once was. But you need a strong leader for that, and we don't have one.
No, we had one in Trump to a certain extent. And he was vilified and turned into worse than Hitler, Stalin, and Mao combined by the vermin in the media. They lied about everything he did, and everything that they said he did, he wasn't doing. And the Joe Biden is doing. That's the odd part from my point of view, Jeff.
Well, I mean, who's really surprised by any of that? It's
I did a book years ago called Scorched Earth, Restoring the Country After Obama. And I quoted a French scholar no one ever heard of, André Pijaniol, who wrote, Roman civilization did not pass peacefully away. It was assassinated. It was published in 2016. And I just looked at that headline again. I mean, that quote. Did anyone really hear that? And what does it matter?
Yeah, I was just going to add to that the other quote about the Roman Empire. I think it was Gibbons in the Fall of the Roman Empire. No civilization is destroyed from without until it is first destroyed from within, and we're witnessing that now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're being destroyed from within, and while they're doing it, they're telling us they're making it stronger by making it more diverse, and diversity is strength. It's right out of Orwell. Years ago, I said diversity is perversity. Of course, I knew what I was talking about. It was a code word. It was not integration of blacks and whites and Asians. It was about a particular subset of humanity that wanted to impose their perverted worldview on everyone. And now they're doing it to our children in plain sight and using the hammer of the government via school boards to break parents down who stand up to their preachings.
Well, the option, of course, is to take your child out of that school and homeschool, or go to a private school that is not going to indoctrinate them, or start your own school. That's something that I did years ago. You really cannot kowtow or collapse to these people. If we do that, it's over.
When will they end homeschooling and make it illegal, saying that you're poisoning children's minds?
Well, you know what? Again, who cares what they say? I mean, those of us who didn't go to college, who couldn't afford it or didn't have the grades, managed to survive okay. it's really, why let them dictate?
Because they control the media. They control the FBI. They control the intelligence agencies through Biden. Oh, Biden, I almost said.
Yeah, well, you would have been right.
Oh, Biden has now implanted this element into all of our intelligence agencies. The Defense Department's become a laughingstock.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
I had a gentleman on yesterday. It was just shocking. It was a Major Galvin, I believe, who was falsely accused and his men of conducting homicide in Afghanistan. They were tried in a kangaroo court, and he spent 11 years clearing his name. 11 years. I could not believe what I was listening to, what they did to him. It reminded me of Major Fred Galvin, author of A Few Bad Men. The man serves 27 years in the Marine Corps, rises from the beginnings as a 17-year-old to become an officer, serves in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait. First, he leads the first special ops company in the Marines. He earns 49 military medals and ribbons. And then his elite team of U.S. Marines is set up for a fall for Afghanistan war crimes they did not commit. Major Galvin spends 11 years redeeming his honor and the honor of his men. And I say, this reminds me of Paths of Glory. And we're going to talk about movies in a minute, Jeff, because you're an expert on that. Paths of Glory, he calls them Chateau Generals. I said, that's a great phrase because it really ties into Paths of Glory. And he said, they sit up there saying, sacrifice the men. We don't care. Someone's got to take a fall. Let our warriors take it. They're just expendables anyway.
Yeah, the scapegoating is nothing new, and it's not going to end in the near future. But you mentioned movies, and I would submit to you that movies have the ability to change a society.
Absolutely. They did me. I was conditioned by them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for example, our entire view of cowboys and Indians comes from a handful of Jewish producers who grew up under pogroms. They didn't know from cowboys and Indians. They knew from Cossacks coming in and destroying their villages.
Did they make the Indians into Cossacks when the Cossacks were the U.S. cavalry?
Yeah, well, because what they knew growing up was, you know, like in Fiddler on the Roof, Anatevka, where the Russians come in burning and destroying weddings and that sort of thing. So what they did was they figured, well, you know, all local warfare must be like that. So we'll just do that same thing and we'll call them Indians and we'll make the heroes cowboys.
But you have to agree with me. The cowboys were the ones burning down the villages.
Well, yes, but if you read some, there's a great novel about Indian life, Little Big Man, which explains how they were attacking, making war on one another long before we got here. This is nothing.
I know it was the Crips and the Bloods.
And for that matter, the same is true of Africa. You go around the world, anywhere, you're going to see that kind of.
Native American to Native American tribes are very much like inner city gangs, but they perfected the art of torture to a level people don't believe. They would capture an enemy, and they would literally take his skin off and leave him alive and throw him out in the snow.
Yeah, well, that was one of the quicker ways to die.
Oh,
they could prolong death for a long, long time. I commend you to see Ozana's Raid, the Burt Lancaster movie from the early 70s that depicts some of what was done.
First Geronimo, then Cochise, and now the bloodiest Apache of them all, Ozana. To stop Ozana, the army sent a patrol commanded by a fledgling lieutenant and his advisor, a battle-scarred scout. The scout, Burt Lancaster. The lieutenant, Bruce Davison. The sergeant, Richard Jekyll.
Give us a hint, since it's a podcast, give us some tortures that were done by the sacred Native American, because the superior virtue of the oppressed by Bertrand Russell impressed me when I was young. And we always assume that the oppressed people have superior virtue, but unfortunately that isn't true.
Well, the outstanding horror in that film was when they captured a homesteader, tied him to a log with his arms behind him, spread his legs and set a fire in his crotch and roasted him slowly with a small fire and then a much larger one, all the while feeding him pieces of his dog.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Was that a truce? Was that something based on what had been done?
The script was based on actual events.
What about that movie from Africa where the white guy gets caught by? I never forget that. I wish I could remember the name of it. He's a white hunter. He gets caught by an African tribe.
The Naked Prey.
Yes.
With Cornel Wilde.
Yes.
Africa. 100 years ago, a trackless land. Majestic. Savage. Bloodstained. Life here was at its most primitive. Africa's wealth attracted the greedy. In such a land, in such a time, vengeful African warriors would attack a safari with unbelievable cruelty. Man became the naked prey.
And I saw a scene. I can't. It's one of those things I wish I had never seen. They capture a fat white hunter. They put mud around him.
Yep. Roast him over the fire.
They put mud around him, and then they put two breathing tubes through the clay as it hardens. And then they put him in a fire like a clay pot, and they slowly roast him alive. Is that reality?
Yeah. Well, look, I can't attest to the truth of that one.
You're a screenwriter. Who came up with that one?
Well, I would say to that point that every screenwriter does research first. And I have to tell you, I studied with a martial artist named Shaka Zulu, who had been trained by the Zulu tribes. He incorporated Zulu fighting techniques.
Shaka Zulu.
They gave him the name of their revered ruler because they were so impressed with his.
He was the black. He was black, American black.
He was a black man. He was a master of jujitsu. He was a bodyguard at the World's Fair in New York in 64. And they were so impressed with his skills that they invited him to come to Africa and study with them. So when he came back, he created a system called Zujitsu, which incorporated these Zulu fighting techniques.
Is that like Jujitsu? J-E-W?
It's Jujitsu, but with a Zulu in front.
No, C-U. I don't mean J-U-Jitsu. I mean J-E-W-Jitsu.
Oh, yeah, that's what we daven. It's so I was privileged to learn some of those fighting techniques. And I have to tell you, they were as brutal as any that I studied in any of the other Japanese or Chinese forms. But having said all of that, when I was with the Chumash natives in Santa Barbara, we went up into the mountains and did skinwalking. And as much as you find
skinwalks, I see skinwalking on social media lately. What is it?
Yeah, well, it's when you let the animal spirit, whatever indigenous animal spirit is present, let them into your body and take over and become your companion animal.
Am I like, so I become Teddy since he passed away?
It might be that. If you're up in the mountains of Santa Barbara, it's more likely to be a wolf or
I'm not peeing on the rug lately, but okay.
Well, I'm glad for that, at least not because you think you're
not yet. Not yet. It's only been since November. May God rest his soul. But I do miss my, I used to call Teddy my spirit guide. Many nights I would say, you know, he's in the bed with me and I know he's protecting me from these spirits that float around. I've not had a dog, Jeff, since he died. I've had a dog since I was a little boy, one dog or another.
Yeah.
It's a horrible thing living without an animal in your house.
Well, there's an energy that comes with that. And you certainly, when you study the Shaolin animal forms like, tiger and eagle and crane and that sort of thing, you realize what an affinity we have with all of nature. I did a book with William Shatner called The Spirit of the Horse because he's a great equestrian. And he talks all about how he bonds with all of the horses to the extent that one of his friends had a blind horse who she would gallop toward a wall and he trusted her to stop him before he hit.
The horse could feel it.
The horse knew that there was an impediment up ahead. So, but didn't stop until she told him. So, if you go back and look at how Alexander the Great or some of the others were so intimidating because they sat on top of these horses. They looked like centaurs coming out of the mist.
So, Jeff,
anyway, let's get back to movies.
Yeah, let's go back to movies. Yeah. But there's so much you and I. This is the beauty of this
conversation. I know.
We start here and we end up somewhere else, which is what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Both of us, you talk about there's probably a free-form martial art that incorporates everything. All forms.
Yeah.
You and I have conversation that's a free form conversation that very few people could engage in without thinking they're crazy. They like to think in linear terms, start with a subject and stick to it, or else they're afraid people will think they're nuts.
Yeah. Well,
but we are nuts. That's why we can do this without fear.
Yeah. The form you're talking about, the martial arts form, is Bagua, which uses aspects of different martial arts forms. But, look, this is...
Don't the Israelis have this Krav Maga, which is everything?
Krav Maga. Yeah, that's a kind of a hard-hitting, straightforward, put them on the ground within 5 seconds martial art. It's the problem with Krav Maga is if you don't knock them out right away,
they'll kill you.
Tired? No, you'll get tired really fast.
Oh, because you're using all your energy.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Oh, so let's jump to two movies now. So there's two. I wrote you about a movie I hated this week, the $200 million movie called The Gray Man.
What do you know about the Sierra program?
Reckless mystery men you guys send in when you can't officially send anyone else.
The Gray Man.
Lloyd. They got an urgent locate and destroy.
That could be fun. The man's got some street cred.
Right. It was just gratuitous murder where the guy would walk up and point a gun and just shoot everyone in the room. I said, that's where these idiots in the school shootings are getting this from. The video games are just like that. Then I watch a movie the next night called The Operator, which I thought was fabulous. And you commented that you liked it. Was it called? No, The Contractor.
The Contractor. They're with Chris Pine.
Who's a better soldier? You're my dad.
Careful.
Come on. Let's go.
Did you actually see my dad's wife?
Yes. We looked after each other.
Kind of brothers.
Yeah, kind of like brothers.
It was excellent. It was believable. It was not gratuitous. The killing was not gratuitous. It was not just kill everyone in sight. It was like measured in a certain way, but it was also more believable. Why is that, do you think?
Well, first of all, we really have to discuss this question of whether screen violence or video game violence provokes real world violence. You have fired weapons, and you know that it's a different experience pulling a hair trigger and seeing something disintegrate, you know, hundreds of yards away instantly. There's a difference between that and watching something on the screen.
Wait, slow down. Want to follow what you're saying. If I fire at a 50 or 100 yard target,
right,
which I haven't done in a long while because I've only used handguns in the range to qualify for my permit.
Sure, sure.
I haven't picked up a Ruger Mini 14 in 10 years or more. I don't go to an outdoor range. But you're saying even shooting a target from a distance is not the same as?
As watching it on TV or in a video game. When you feel, look, it's a process. When you realize what a hair trigger really is, which is you just tense your finger a little bit and that's going to something is going to fall apart far away from you. That immediately creates a different perspective and reality than what you see when Ryan Gosling or some video game first person shooter is engaged. So I would also submit that the generation that was raised on the most violent Westerns in early TV history, and I'm talking about, you know, The Rifleman, Wanted Dead or Alive, Have Gun Will Travel, grew up to protest the war in Vietnam. So I don't know the degree to which there's a cause and effect there. I'm not a psychiatrist.
That's an interesting question. I grew up on violent TV movies, violent movies in the theater. Cowboys and Indians, they just bang, bang, you're dead.
When
I was 5 and 6 years old in the Bronx, you're making me remember now, I got they bought me a cowboy suit and I had two cap guns. I'm remembering now the little apartment on Longfellow Avenue. Anyone who came to the doorbell and rang it in the apartment, if my mother or father would open it, I'd shoot them with the cap guns. Bang, bang, you're dead. And they'd laugh and the smoke would rise in the house. I felt great. I knew I was playing.
Well, I think there's a natural progression between play. I mean, look, we did it with swords and toy bows and arrows.
Hatchets. We had arrows with rubber tips on them.
Rubber tips, absolutely, and rubber knives and whatever.
Remember those things, God.
You outgrow a lot of that, and the people who don't, or the people who seek that out, are sociopaths. So then you have to look at the other issue, which is broken homes, no father figure.
What's a sociopath, Jeff? Define sociopath.
somebody who just lashes out at society willy-nilly without any feeling and an intent to destroy.
No empathy for the victim
whatsoever. And indeed, we don't know to what degree they take pleasure. It varies from person to person, I'm sure.
Could we jump to the world stage? Is Putin a sociopath in his mutilation of Ukraine?
I'm not a psychiatrist, but I would say that if you look back at the history of Russian czars, you're not seeing behavior that is any different from what Ivan Groshny, Ivan the Terrible did, or Peter the Great, or any of those. Or look at Tsar Nicholas, for God's sake, the second. These people were totalitarian conquerors. Point to any tyrant throughout history, from Attila to Caesar, you're going to find the same kind of behavior. And we could argue that there were better ways of resolving this, but that's usually the case, and the fault is usually on both sides for not seeking it.
Yeah, well, we could talk about Ukraine for a minute or two here. Since we talked last, only one world statesman came forward and called for a settlement, who was Kissinger, and he was roundly attacked by the left for calling for a peace settlement, that they should give up, you know, the eastern regions. He was called every name under the sun, from senile to a warmonger to a Russian propagandist. He's the only one who said, we've got to stop this before it gets out of hand.
Yeah, well, you look, in the 19th century, the British were over there fighting. I mean, the Crimea, the Charge of the Light Brigade. These pieces of land change hands over time. That's a reality. We didn't see a lot of coverage of the Russian citizens and or sympathizers in Ukraine who were being brutalized. And by the way, my ancestry is Ukrainian and Russian. So, I grew up in a house where these matters were discussed frequently and openly and with great prejudice. So
against the Russians.
Well, except for the family members who were Russian.
What, they like Tsar Nikolai?
No. But, they were always sympathetic towards the people, towards the oppressed population.
Well, I used to hear little songs sung by some men that I didn't even understand as a little boy. And they were vulgar songs. Tsar Nikolai, you know, and I could say the rest of it up. They were cursing him.
Yeah.
And they would curse him and they would dance. These men, these are the tough guys in the circle of men. These were the warrior men.
Well,
they hated him.
When we were kids, we heard the same songs about Hitler, Goebbels, and the rest of the Nazis.
Well, who do we hear them about now?
Well, I'm not really sure.
Who are the villains in America today?
Well, white apparently men? We all are.
Anyone who's straight, white, and heterosexual is public enemy number one?
Well, again, it depends on who is yelling the loudest. I think if you polled most people in the country, you'd find we are all still basically centrists and sane.
But, Jeff, you work in the publishing industry. You work in Hollywood. You know the horror stories better than I do. And without getting personal, I know that my great editor, Kate Hartson, who created a great division, Center Street, for Hachette, and had one bestseller after another, was thrown out of the company. They eliminated the whole company that she ran, and they will not publish any basic, you call it conservative, that's not the right word. Any book that's pro-American is not being published by Hachette anymore, so far as I can tell.
You're absolutely right.
All of New York publishing has been taken over by the, I don't even use the word woke because I hate the word. It's like the old word they used to say, PC, I never would use it, or the word woke. It doesn't mean anything. These are absolute fascists.
Yeah, but that leaves, it's sort of like the extinction of the dinosaurs, which left room for the mammals. You have publishers like Bombardier and Newsmax, which has a book division, which are starting to fill that void. These books are still being published.
The Newsmax is going to publish my book. It was supposed to, I wrote it already. I have to rewrite it by the time they publish it.
Yeah,
I wrote a book for them. It was supposed to come out in October, just before the midterms. It's been pushed into 2023 of March. How is it going to be relevant then? I'll have to rewrite the book by then.
Yeah, I would say so, you know, but
they are a great publisher. They're doing very important books. Newsmax.
Right. So I'm not fearful that the voices will be silenced. They're no longer a mass medium. It's true. But look, you know what? Comic books went through this in the 1950s. We wrote about that in Stop Mass Hysteria. When Congress threatened to shut down the industry because the horror comics were too horrifying and the crime comics were causing juvenile delinquency, they said. But, you know, they caused a little a blip in the history of comic books. Yeah, Stop Mass Hysteria. They caused a blip in the history of comic books. But they got back on their feet. Stan Lee came along. Marvel Comics grew.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
How's your background with comics? I know you have a thing with comics, correct?
Yeah, I started out at DC Comics as an assistant editor and met some of the giants who had invented the genre, the medium. And then I knocked around several other companies until I started a company called Atlas Comics with Martin Goodman, who had founded Marvel Comics. So, I've been doing that.
Aren't you working with my friend and your friend, Stephen Paul, on some comic projects, movie?
Yeah. I can't really talk about that, but the answer is yes. The answer is absolutely yes. And
I spoke with him this morning and I said, I'm speaking with Jeff Roven today. He was a great guy. So, he said he and I had the same martial. I said, he's a great martial artist. So Stephen said, well, we had the same teacher in New York. I said, you, Steve, you practice. I didn't know. I only know him from the occasional times we met together and had actually ate bagels and lox.
Absolutely. No, Stephen Paul and I get along. And the martial artist in question. So I'll give you just a short anecdote. His name was Johnny Cool, K-U-H-L.
That's what he mentioned. And
he was sometimes, let's just say he was the muscle for a certain group. And
he was the okay, got it.
Yeah, and what happened was when New York went broke in the 70s, anybody who had a gun permit was permitted to become an auxiliary cop. So Johnny Cool and my uncle would go around in their patrol car and they would let me come along with them. I was a young teenager.
Your uncle was a cop?
My uncle had a costume store off Times Square, but he had a gun permit. He had a gun permit, so he became an auxiliary cop.
So wait, this guy, the enforcer, and your uncle would do what?
They would drive around in the patrol car as auxiliary cops looking for lawbreakers.
Wait, what patrol car?
They had a patrol car out of Midtown South. So
I'm losing you. They had an official NYPD patrol car?
Yeah. It said auxiliary on it, but they had this car.
Okay, so they permitted people with permits to be auxiliary cops.
Correct. Okay. You had limited authority, but that didn't stop Johnny Cool or my uncle from grabbing pimps off the street, throwing them in the car, having them fall down the concrete stairs of Midtown South Precinct. Okay, and the girls, all of the streetwalkers loved them. They also worked as bagmen for that organization, but we won't get into that. So Stephen Paul and I will be doing some stuff together.
So he was this enforcer was a part-time martial arts instructor.
He became a full-time martial arts instructor after, and this was wild. I didn't know until about 5 years ago that he also had a sideline as a porn star.
Oh,
and I found
he didn't wear tight costumes during the training.
No, but they were open-chested. The gi is open-chested, and I'm watching this movie, and I said, "Shit, I know that chest." It was in fact Johnny Cool, and the martial arts community knew nothing about his.
And I look him up on YouTube. Are there any KUHL Johnny Cool videos?
KUHL, you will find pictures of him as a martial artist But you'd have to look up individual movies. And seriously, I don't know.
Nothing from the waist down.
Yeah. All of him. But look, the thing, and you'll appreciate this. The thing about those porn movies, they are the best record of Times Square and Manhattan in the early 1960s, because everything was shot in the streets. So you'll see.
Okay, now you triggered something else in me.
Yeah.
Times Square, that great series that was on television 2 years ago called The Deuce.
Yeah. Right. From the 70s. Yeah.
That was one showing the whole evolution of the porn industry. And then there was another couple of flashbacks to that early day of the porn industry that I saw recently. I can't even remember. Was it in The Many Saints of Newark?
Maybe. I saw that, but I don't remember it.
Antonio Soprano.
I wonder if I can talk to you alone for a moment, Mrs. Soprano.
On the basis of the Sanford-Binet, he's high IQ.
You can't prove it by me. He's got a D-plus average.
Well, he doesn't apply himself, but he is smart. The results tell us. He's a leader.
By the way, speaking of that for 1 minute, I didn't like it when I first watched it. I thought it was vacuous. Then I watched it a second time, and it got better. Then I watched pieces of it a third time. It got even better.
Yeah, that often happens.
And Scorsese was the director, but the acting in it, some of the women actors in particular, were off the charts great.
Wait, Scorsese didn't direct the Sopranos movie.
What, The Many Saints of Newark?
Yeah. It was somebody else.
But anyway, the point is I love the women actresses. One of them played Tony's mother as a young woman when she gets shot.
Right.
Shot in the wig by the... Yep. They actually enacted that scene. They're driving in the Cadillac convertible with the top down, and she's going on and on and on. And the father is seen as eating his heart out. Like, why doesn't you shut the hell up? And he pulls out his 32 snub nose, and bang, he shoots her in the big hairdo, and it shows it smoking, as had been described in one of the Sopranos series. They actually reenacted it. I mean, who the hell would do a thing like that even? It was frightening.
Okay, since you brought it up, we're going to go there. We're going to go to gun violence in the movies. And I want to make this point very strongly. And I know neither you or I saw this in its first run. But in 1903, one of the first narrative movies was The Great Train Robbery. Now, mind you, movies were just a couple of years old at that time. The end of that movie... full face, upper body of one of the main characters, points a gun at the audience, pulls the trigger, and fires. Now, we're talking about an audience that did not yet understand how movies worked and what they were depicting. They went screaming out of the theater when he fired the gun at them.
Wow.
That lesson has never been lost on Hollywood. And The idea that you can be in kind of safe jeopardy, like on a roller coaster, is a significant part of many of these movies.
Safe jeopardy. That's a great phrase.
Did you
make it up?
Yeah, I just thought of it right now.
There's a title for a book for you.
Safe Jeopardy.
Safe Jeopardy by Jeff Rovin.
Yeah.
A History of Violence in the Movies.
Yeah. Well, but it's. And again, think about all of the biblical movies in the 50s. You know, what was more violent than the end of the chariot race in Ben-Hur? spoiler alert, you know, Stephen Boyd gets run over with a chariot. So these are not new. God, I remember in that movie, Charlton Heston as a galley slave, he escapes and takes a torch and shoves it in somebody's face. This is a movie that families went to see.
Right, but he was the good guy because he was the slave.
Well, he was the oppressed Jew. And I also want to point out, of course, you couldn't have an actor like Charlton Heston anymore, not because of his conservative views, but because of what they're calling toxic masculinity. It's bad. It's bad to be straight and virile. Look at Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas, John Wayne, all of these guys. They have no counterparts.
Sterling Hayden, my hero.
Sterling Hayden, I once ran into him in the street, and boy, did he have presence and gravitas. And
I love his movie.
He was tall.
I'm reading his biography, Wanderer. People may not know who he is. He played the corrupt captain in The Godfather with that great voice when he punches the Michael Corleone character in the face, breaks his nose. And then they go to that dinner with the Turk, Salazzo. And they're sitting there, and he says, I'm sorry, Mike. You know, I had to do it. How's the veal in this place? The other one says the best veal in the city, blah, blah, blah. But he's the big Irishman with the white hair, with the great voice. He was 6'6", wasn't he? Something like that.
A little shorter, but yeah, he was up there. He was up there.
Well, he was an actual hero. He was a, quote, real man's man in the true sense of the word, not a fake Tom Cruise type who plays the same part for 45 years. He was a real hero. I understand that he worked for the early days in the OSS, bringing supplies, I believe, into Yugoslavia as a ship captain.
Wouldn't surprise me.
He was the real McCoy. He was like the real, character that they've written about. And well, he hated Hollywood. Hey, you should read what he writes about Hollywood and Wanda.
Oh, I know.
Hated the movies he made, despised the people who produced them.
Except for Dr. Strangelove. He loved playing General Jack D. Ripper, the crazy general.
I didn't know he was in that one.
Oh, my God. You've got to see that. He is simply incredible.
He lived in Sausalito, not too far from where I live. And there's a barbershop that still has his picture on the wall.
Yeah.
I went in there about 2 months ago. I've walked by many times, and I hadn't had my haircut since COVID came. I went in for my first haircut. I went into the barber, an old Italian. He was in his 80s. And I said, is this where Sterling Hayden had his hair cut? And he said, yeah. I said, well, if it's good enough to cut his hair, I'll sit down in the chair. Well, I didn't actually cut his hair, but he did come here. So, yeah. And his presence is still felt around the sea, the yacht harbor. Some people still remember the guy. Wow. It was a bad haircut, by the way. It wasn't that good. It took me a month to let my hair grow in from when the old guy cut it. I was afraid he was going to cut my ear off.
But you're always wearing hats, so who cares?
Well, but look what he did to me. Look what he did to me, Michael. Look.
Oh, my God. That's
look what
right.
he did
that's,
to me. Anyway, but the point is Jeff, I highly recommend his autobiography, Wanderer. It's when he took a 94-foot schooner out of Sausalito with his children and kidnapped them to take them to, I believe, Tahiti to escape a bad divorce. It's an amazing book.
Well, and then, you know, he did that movie Terror in a Texas Town, where unlike every other gunslinger, Sterling Hayden carried a harpoon.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Oh, okay. So these were the great men of the toxic masculine men that we were talking about.
Yeah, but don't forget, like Sterling Hayden, Heston served in the military. Burt Lancaster served in the military. Clark Gable, Gene Kelly, Jimmy Stewart, all of these guys served. And so they brought, oh, God, such weight to everything they did subsequent to that. You knew that they had seen some life. And the great directors, too, like William Wyler. He made that incredible movie, The Best Years of Our Lives, about the veterans after World War II. But he had been over there. He saw it. That's why it's so real. That's why it endures.
Yeah, but many of our great politicians were men who served in the military. From
right. Yeah.
Right. The Eisenhower. I thought JFK was a great president. He'd be a right wing, you know, white supremacist today.
Sure.
Democrats wouldn't touch him.
Right. That's okay.
I don't think JFK would be a never Trumper.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not
so
at
we
all.
Come back to toxic masculinity. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's this idea that a man is somehow a dominant figure by default, by birthright, however you want to describe it, and swaggers through life. Expecting a certain kind of reaction, if you will, to him just showing up. And, you know, That may be true to some degree.
Is this driven by the lesbians who hate men?
I wouldn't say that any particular group drives that so much as this kind of newspeak. It's just a convenient way of further diminishing so-called white supremacy.
But they never talk about toxic masculinity in African Americans.
No, and by the way,
amongst Hispanic drug dealers,
who was more virile and still is probably, but then Richard Roundtree is Shaft. You know, this guy.
No, but you never hear about toxic masculinity applied to African American and gangsters or boxers.
Right. Well, that's why I said it's used to further diminish this insane notion of white supremacy.
Okay, so there it is. We're talking about absolute overt racism towards white males in particular.
White cis males, yeah. Yeah.
not white sissy males as
Not that.
Luckily I had training in chemistry, so when that came along I knew the difference between CIS and SIS. But yeah. You see, you're a novelist. It's a funny way of saying it, but
I'm sorry, Michael, but anyone with an elementary school education should know that SIS and CIS are different, even if you don't know what they mean.
I doubt that they know what cis and you know.
Yeah, no.
I'm holding Stop Mass Hysteria, which you co-wrote with me, America's Insanity from the Salem Witch Trials to the Trump Witch Hunt, which you just referenced a few minutes ago. And there's a chapter here called Crowd Psychology, Mass Hysteria. And I believe you wrote this. You wrote mass hysteria or mass hypnosis is insidious and stealthy. It falls into two categories. The first is positive hallucinations or hysteria. When you believe something is real, absent evidence, just because someone says so, or it fits your preconceived notions. I would say this concept of white supremacy or toxic masculinity falls into that category, Jeff. Would that be correct?
Yeah, and I think you have to make a distinction between that and, say, belief in God, because they're clearly not the same thing, but people are going to try to analogize.
Well, raise a good point. Okay, when I did a YouTube 3 weeks ago, showing myself putting on tefillin, which I had not really done maybe mm-hmm. once or twice in my whole life, but I've gotten to age that I'm at and I'm more fearful of the future and of eternity. And I get frightened sometimes. I find that this quote ritual of wrapping tefillin, wrapping a leather thong, putting a black box on my head, which has biblical inscriptions in it and tuning it in. You actually have to put it on your head, hairline, straight up. I actually do feel some connectivity.
Well, you would. And there's two reasons for that. First of all, you're putting it on what the yogic tradition would say is the third eye, where the seat of wisdom is located.
Right here.
Exactly.
Is that where it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
No wonder I've been thinking clearly. It's these hats.
Hey, well, you cover it up. You're keeping a blinder on your third eye. The other thing
I'm not letting stuff into my third eye.
Well, that's a problem. Yeah, that's a problem too. The more important thing is that when you put on tefillin or a crucifix or any other religious object, you are submitting to the superiority of the universe. Most people,
amen.
I shouldn't say that. Many people find it difficult to put their ego aside,
yes.
to stop trying to assert their will on the universe, which is a fool's errand, and to let the universe assert its will on you. The universe doesn't lie. It won't lead you astray. Hmm. We, on the other hand, screw up when we try to second guess what the universe wants us to do.
Well, in the tefillin, Jeff, you're 100% right. One of the leather thongs goes on your weak arm, in my case, my left arm, and the little black box with biblical phrases is supposed to be to your heart. Then you tie your hand up with it, then around your finger. And that means you're submitting your animal force to God, and then you put the other one on the head to tune in from your head and your heart. And you're supposed to, at the end of this ritual, unify your head and your heart for that day in all actions towards God.
Right.
But if we have destroyed God in America, first by taking out the Ten Commandments from our schools, which began with "I am your only God, you shall worship no other gods. There shall be no other gods before thee." I remember as a kid in elementary school, there were the Ten Commandments. They never offended me. I wasn't a religious kid. But every school had the Ten Commandments on the wall. So kids are bored in school. I was. My mind would drift everywhere. But where would you drift? The pictures of the United States, George Washington, and then the Ten Commandments. And you were subliminally reading them and taking them in. Flash forward to today. I don't know what's on the walls of a schoolroom, but there certainly aren't the Ten Commandments and George Washington.
No, it's diversity and inclusion. And again, it's not that that's a bad thing. It's just that when it becomes the only thing, that's dangerous. I want to point out, by the way, that in the Taoist tradition and the Tai Chi tradition, your left arm, your heart arm, is the intake of energy. So for you to put tefillin on that arm to plug into your heart makes complete sense. You know, you often see the Shaolin monks will put Buddha in their heart by bringing their hand down their chest. It's always a reminder.
Is that what they do with that?
Yes, that you are not first. You
is
are
that
not.
What that means.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't martial artists begin their movements with that?
It's a gesture of humility.
But I've seen martial artists do that before. Their moves.
Well, that's different. We don't have visual aids for the audience, but that's different from what I just am demonstrating to you now, where you're aligning with your core, ready to break someone's voice box. But the thing is all of these great religions have the same kinds of ideas, and society may try to destroy God, but God is not a competitive part of the universe. It's not feasible. God is outside of the universe. And
so why does God let this stuff go on in the world right now? Why is he letting America fall apart? You know, I remember the great phrase I quoted a million times on the radio from Thomas Mann, God sees the truth but waits.
Yeah. That's partly the answer. Just because we, like I said before, when anybody tries to assert their will on the universe, it's bound to fail. And that's what's happening now. God's not going to come down, enter our universe, create, you know, a new emissary and say, hey, knock that off. No, we have the laws. We have the Bible. If we choose not to follow the teachings, then we do so at our peril. So we get expelled from Eden.
Well, thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it and learned something from it. We have about 400 other episodes available for you to listen to absolutely free. You can go back into our vast library of podcasts and listen to any one of them at any time. And remember this, if you want to listen to my podcast ad-free, sign up for the Savage Premium Membership and get access to ad-free podcasts as well as some premium content from our Savage Archives. How do you sign up for those ad-free podcasts? Please visit michaelsavage.com for a link. Again, thank you for your listenership. This is Michael Savage.